Christmas is a time to say I love you. Share the joys and laughter and the tears. Christmas is a time to say I love you. And I feel that it lasts all through the year.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now zero shopping days left until Christmas Day, because today is Christmas Day, and that means this is Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. This is our special edition Christmas episode, the one we've been looking forward to all year long. My name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Hey, what's up?
How's it going?
Aside
from the obvious, how's it going?
Yeah, the obvious is how's it going.
That's understandable. And Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad, what's shaking?
What's that behind the tree? Is it the Christmas episode of Christmas Creeps?
It just might be.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Mazel tov.
Thank you.
How are you all doing?
On a chilly early winter morning like this, you know, it's just about as well as I can possibly be. It's Christmas. I mean, come on.
I just finished a batch of cookie dough. That's actually true.
Oh, man.
Yes, that's not kayfabe. That's real life.
But you know what? You know, I'm not one for drinking before noon, but you know, today's a special occasion. So you know what? Let's just crack them on open.
Can check, bottle check. Ooh. Lay it on me.
Everything that I have to share tonight is kind of like Thanksgiving leftovers, stuff that I've bought well before Thanksgiving, for Thanksgiving, that just kind of hung around until today. This is an 11 Lakes Brewing sweet Mama Yama spiced sweet potato ale.
Hey, people have sweet potatoes and yams for Christmas. You're still in the right ballpark.
That is fair. That is true. But this is definitely, has definitely got the kind of Thanksgiving aroma and flavor to it. But it's pretty good.
Nice. Jonathan, what are you working with?
I have the gift that keeps on giving, as in it's finally the last of the pumpkin latte blonde beers, the four pack that I have, because it's one of those things that's like, yeah, that was okay. I'm absolutely not going to drink a second one right this second, so it takes a minute to get through it.
Like a meal in a glass.
Kind of, yeah. It's more one of those things where it's like, well, that's an interesting flavor. It's not something I'm going to put regularly into me, but it's nice for a change. That's what this is.
Very nice.
And if last but not least, Bradford, what's on the docket?
I have a Mustang Sally Coconuts Migrate. It's a bourbon barrel aged Imperial Brown. I've been saving this one for a special occasion. I picked this up on Thanksgiving, actually. But it's been hanging out in my garage, waiting for this very moment.
That sounds delightful. And you know, not to be outdone by the drinks, I also have some holiday snacks to share with everybody tonight.
Oh, no.
Once again, I've been saving this since well before Halloween. This is a bag of Target brand kettle corn, or rather kettle chips, stuffing flavor, and herb potato chips.
Oh, I could actually...
Thanksgiving.
I would totally mess with those.
Thanksgiving stuffing potato chips.
I do love stuffing. Do love a good kettle chip. Ugh.
Give this a crunch into the old microphone.
It's the first one that I'm not disgusted by in a long time.
That is like pure strain umami on a chip.
Oh, take me away.
You know what? This is dangerous. I might eat this whole bag of chips tonight. This is okay. I'm kind of in love with these.
It's Christmas. Treat yourself. Now you're kicking yourself for not buying a whole case back when you could. Are they still available in stores?
You know, I didn't know what I had until just now.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Tears in the rain.
That, yeah. Oh, I'm about to cry. That's so good. Merry Christmas, everyone. A potato chip made me cry.
Many happy returns, Joe.
Oh, my God. I'm getting emotional tonight because, like, it's been so long since we've had a show, and I've been so excited to finally record with you guys that it's also our Christmas show, and it's just, like, this is the season finale for Christmas Creeps this year, and what better way to wrap up 2022 than with the release of a yet another Christmas Story sequel, A Christmas Story Christmas, released on HBO Max this season, which once again finds us following the adventures of one Ralph Parker, once again played by Peter Billingsley himself. And we're going to dig into it tonight a little bit, but I want to go ahead and just note right now, this is what, the third or fourth attempt at a Christmas Story sequel?
Really?
I believe so. Fourth?
There was Summer Place or something like that, or My Summer Story.
There was My Summer Story.
We're counting those. Got it.
Yeah.
Are we going to count Ollie Hop Noodles Haven of Bliss? Is that an official Christmas Story sequel?
I'm going to say it wouldn't exist without the Christmas Story, so...
Okay. And then, of course, there was the 2012 extremely regrettable A Christmas Story 2.
Ugh.
Where a teenaged Ralphie tries his best to get a car for Christmas.
It's so bad.
Has officially been rendered non-canonical by the events of A Christmas Story Christmas, as far as we know.
And you know what? That's okay.
It's all the better for it. And I was thinking about this the other day, like, A Christmas Story has as many part twos as Terminator 2 has part threes. And I don't know what that says about us as a society, but here we are.
I think the lesson to take away from it is that if you keep having to, like, go back to a previous one and build a sequel off of it because the last time you made a sequel was bad, you should probably just give up, because the best you're going to hope for, which this one rose to, is, oh, that was better than I expected.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
I mean, yeah, to skip straight to the end of the show, this is one that I think, kind of dreading, because, you know, we were here about a year ago talking about 8-Bit Christmas, which tried to be a Christmas Story for the 80s and fell flat on its face in all the wrong ways. But then with this film, A Christmas Story Christmas, I think we were pleasantly surprised that it sort of nimbly jumps across a lot of the obvious pratfalls that it could have stuck itself with.
Yeah, like, it kind of stumbles every single time it shoehorns in, like, clips from the first movie, but it never falls flat on its face, I want to say.
Right, and I feel like the more egregious bits are not even using the old clips, it's more trying to repeat or mimic anything from the old movie, the first movie.
Right.
Because, like, even going as crass as just showing us clips of the old movie, I'm fine with it, because at the end of the day, those are still clips from a movie that I like. And so I can't fault it for that, but, you know, when adult Ralph tries to do anything that's kind of just a direct reference to the original, it's not great. It's extremely hokey, actually.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite scenes were things that were kind of, in a way, could have belonged to other movies as well, just because they weren't really specific to this. Like, the entire caroling scene was probably one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Yeah, that was one of my standouts as well.
Yeah, just needlessly mean-spirited, too.
No, they deserve it.
Oh, no, I agree with the sentiment, but just for a film that's trying to be, like, cuddly and cute and nice, like, no, this movie is savage toward even the concept of carolers. And I'm here for it.
Mm. Oh, and I absolutely loved Yeno and Aya showing up for literally, like, 3 seconds.
Who now?
The guy who plays Grover Dill.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, like in yeah. in a flashback. He's here. He's gone.
No. In like the weird dream sequence about prison, like he shows up as an adult,
yes.
next to Scott, and then they're and then he's got. That's the only scene he's in the movie.
Dressed as they were as children, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So how do we?
So one thing that I kind of my love hate thing with Christmas Story is all of the weird like side like the cutaways and like the Doug funny ass dreams, which probably Doug got it from this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it always just feels like they're always kind of the weakest part of the movie. These
are also the weakest part of the movie.
Yeah, but like
yes,
it did it better than like A Christmas Story 2 did. I want to say. But still, yeah, they were still kind of like the, I don't know, they were also not really the best part of the original Christmas Story either.
But at least there it's acceptable because it's like it's a child's imagination running wild.
Yeah.
But here it's a grown ass like 45-year-old man having a dream about being better than Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, it's I do a little bit appreciate like the Scrubs-iness of it though, of where it's like this character is literally just looking off to the side, glassy eyed, imagining shit, while other people are standing around just being like, "What the hell are you doing?"
Yeah, like I would have loved, you know, a reaction shot where like the mom and Ralph's wife are just looking at him like, "Oh, there he goes again," or something, some kind of acknowledgement that like Ralph's imagination. Is all it, I mean obviously it's in his own head, but like everybody knows he's just off daydreaming. I don't know.
Yeah, I did kind of like the Earth to Ralphie with the publisher, which is a callback to the first one with the teacher, but it is what it is.
Right, yeah. So how do we want to get into this tonight? Because you know,
plot summary.
Yeah, we could do that. Am I feeling generous tonight is the question.
Feeling like a jolly old elf.
Let's just not even. I'd say we could just burn through a basic summary extremely quickly and not really, and just worry about like going through individual parts of it because this is kind of like the original movie, made up of scenes more than anything else.
Yeah, and
right. So we kind of handle the scenes that are interesting.
I'm fine with that.
So the basic outline of it is that Ralph has taken a year off from his normal bullshit job in Chicago because he wants to try to become a published writer. They say he and his wife Sandy have saved up enough that they and the two kids can live for a year off of what they've saved where he can just try to get published. He is striking out left and right. They're planning on having the parents up for Christmas. But he gets a call from the mom saying that the old man has passed away. So they go back to home in Indiana to kind of try to celebrate the best they can. Basically, the mom straight up says that, like, the old man would not want them to remember Christmas with, you know, a sad thing. There's like, no, we're going to have a nice, happy Christmas, then everything else can wait, basically. And then it's a series of scenes largely of Ralph trying to live up to his expectations of like what his old man would have done for Christmas, more or less.
Right.
And just general shenanigans, references to the previous movie, all kinds of things all around. That's basically what we're working with as an outline here.
Yeah. And then in between you get scenes with the neighbors, scenes with Ralph's friends, Flick and Schwartz, new adventures that kind of echo things that happened in the original Christmas Story. And all the while, it's sort of couched around this idea that Ralph is stressing how to deliver, you know, the perfect family Christmas to his family. Kind of bites a lot of bits from Christmas Vacation. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And I would honestly, I don't really feel like faulting it for that because A Christmas Story and Christmas Vacation are probably the two movies most agreed upon as like, oh, this is the the comfy Christmas movie. Sit down and enjoy. I will give that there are some sickos and perverts out there who would say, what about Elf?
No.
And
no,
those people should incorrect. Those people should be in jail.
See,
let's caveat it. Those people are either under the age of 16 or should be in jail.
But the problem is those people are also currently running the country right now.
Yeah, right.
But when you go for like the family Christmas type of like we're gonna have a nice family Christmas comedy of errors type thing, those are your two go-tos.
Yeah, and what I find fascinating about my own family is that I've somehow split the difference like almost perfectly, like 30%, 30%, 30%, and I'm sitting right in the middle because like my direct family, you know, our movie is A Christmas Story. My girlfriend's family, their movie is Christmas Vacation. And then my mom's side of the family, my uncle's family, their movie is Elf. And I kind of have to navigate the three halves of that somehow every Christmas. So Christmas morning, I get to get up and go to my uncle's house. And it's always a guessing game as to how many members of that family wear Will Ferrell pajama pants.
Ew.
Yes. That's not a joke. Ugh. That is no joke.
Just got chills.
Sharoni.
Speaking of cribbing from other material, John, you've read In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. How yes. much of that is in this film and how much of it is original material, so to speak?
What I'll say is that in God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash, the framing device is that Ralph is an accomplished writer in New York who is coming back to the Steel Town because he's been commissioned by what he basically calls a capital O official magazine to write a story about, you know, the big city boy coming back home. And he spends most of the day in Flick's bar drawing.
So there's that element.
Yeah.
Is there a sign in Flick's bar in the book, and that's the title of the book? Because that shows up yes. in this film. Okay.
Yes, that's the sign is in the bar, yeah.
Gotcha.
And the bar is Flick's that he has inherited from his dad in the books as well.
Okay. So there's some pulling from the same source material here.
Yeah, there is a strange amount of stuff here and there that's pulled from the books the original movie largely pulled from like four or five different stories majorly, and then here and there a bunch of shit from random stories. Like I almost certainly said all this on the Christmas Story episode, but we'll just run through it real quick. The Red Ryder BB gun thing is one story. The Little Orphan Annie coda ring is another story. The thing about the fuck word, the one in the book is about when Ralph was younger, like when he was like 3 or 4, he learned a dirty joke from his dad. I honestly think the joke was probably the "but you fuck one goat" joke. Then Sorry. The Scut Farkas is a character in some stories, but the story about him beating up the bully is about Grover Dill.
Okay, so I can jump in here because I just the other day listened to what I thought was the In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash audiobook. But it turns out, from what John's describing, what I actually heard was a compilation of those stories wrapped into a yeah. package called A Christmas Story, because it was literally the story of the leg lamp, the Red Ryder BB gun,
yeah.
and Grover Dill and the Bumpus Hounds. Like it was those four like wrapped up together, and I feel like now that hearing you describe that, that makes me think they just sort of cherry-picked a bunch of things from the movie, wrapped them up in a new package, and just put that out into the world.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, that compilation. It's stories from, like, two of the books. It's the last story. It's covered with stories from Wanda Hickey's Night of Golden Memories as well.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
there's a third compilation of, like, the same sort, whose name I forget right now. Like the whole thing with Flick sticking his tongue to the pole, that's from a story that Gene Shepard told on the radio, but I don't think it was ever actually published.
Oh, okay.
And then just also other random things like the thing with like Miss Shields and the vampire, the hillbilly, the not hill, vampire teeth, the hillbilly teeth. That's from that's like a one-off thing in a story about like penny candy.
Mm-hmm.
Just a bunch of random things. And like Delbert Bumpus, which is the kid's name in this movie, that's the name of the Bumpus kid that was Ralph's age when in one of the stories. Well, it's from the story about Scott Farkas, I think, actually.
Okay. Yeah, and from what I remember about this audiobook, Scott Farkas was only mentioned once in the Grover Dill story, just in passing reference that yes, Grover Dill was his protege. And never mentioned it, never mentioned again.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is the people who wrote this definitely were going back to the source material to pull details. In a way that is just kind of like winky and nudgy, but it's also kind of what you want, in a way.
I mean, it's the right way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like there's any like structure to any of the stories to begin with. It's just a collection of stories. So no matter how you weave it, it's always going to work, I feel like.
Yeah, I would rather they pull more stuff from the original content than make things up whole cloth.
Kind of like how a lot of the James Bond movies are based on like snippets of random James Bond books. And unless you've read the books, it's really hard to tell.
Like, yeah, because
what comes from where? Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's so thin as just like, "Oh yeah, there was a thing with alligators in this book." And then that like half of a chapter about alligators turns into the entirety of Live and Let Die, for example. That's not the case. Live and Let Die is one of the books, but you get what I mean, though. It's like,
yeah,
just like stretching this out into a whole larger thing,
right? But I think there's enough, you know, Gene Shepard, you know, Parker family saga material out there that you could conceivably do any number of Christmas stories, and I mean, honestly, at this point, they have. So obviously there's enough out there.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's enough to do an entire, summer thing like they did.
Yeah.
Because the Ollie Hop Noodle story, that's about them going up to a lake upstate for fishing. I think they're going to, like, somewhere in Michigan to go fishing. There's an entire story about one of the neighbors, Lud Kissel, like, who was just, like, the neighborhood drunk, basically, buying the biggest firework he could find. Like, the biggest single firework he could find.
Okay.
So there's and there's lots of room to work with in there. So let's talk about who was the mom in the first movie with the actress?
It was Melinda Dillon, who you either know her from A Christmas Story or from Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
And this was Julie Haggerty, right?
Yes.
From Airplane?
From Airplane, and I can't believe I'm gonna say this in the same sentence. Freddie got fingered.
Oh no. You said it.
Oh no.
Yeah.
She I kind of like wavered back and forth on her being like a good kind of like replacement for Melinda Dillon in terms of like, does this feel like the same mom, basically?
Is she mousy enough?
Yeah.
That's the question you want to ask yourself.
Is she mousy enough, but at the same time, like, still, because you got the feeling that she's the type of mom where, like, she couldn't, like, be sick, otherwise the house would fall apart within a day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And you kind of need to feel like that the character still has that same energy a little bit. So, like, I didn't really, it kind of didn't hit when they were being too much like, oh, she's old, you know, because it's just like, I feel like that's the type of person who, like, they would, like, then, and I'll sleep when I'm dead type, you know?
Right. And like one of the big characteristics of the mom in this is that, you know, because she was, you know, raised during the Depression and lived through all that, she's very stingy about not finishing food. And that's like her one character trait throughout this entire movie. Because, you know, as the old man's passed away, the entire neighborhood has come around and brought casserole after casserole after casserole to the house. And by God, we're going to eat every single bit of this food.
So the whole casserole bit is on point for this region.
Yeah, is that a thing people do around here?
My mom's been in the hospital before. And when she had to stay overnight for, you know, about a week or so, our neighbors did bring casseroles to the house. So like, it's definitely a thing.
Yeah, when my grandfather passed away, definitely there was a bunch of like covered dish type things showing up at the house from all corners.
Right.
Yeah.
They tried to play it up as a gross thing, and for the most part it was, but the baked ziti just made me want baked ziti.
Yeah, but then a lot of them were like the 70s type thing of just like, oh, it's a lime jello and peas.
It's baked mayonnaise.
It's like all this like awful assorted ambrosia salad crap.
Right.
But like all the thing that struck me about that was, so this movie takes place in 1973, and all of the casserole dishes were like these earth-toned Tupperware containers, which I am extremely nostalgic for because my parents had a ton of those when I was a kid.
Yeah. Aww.
Which is like weird misplaced nostalgia because like that's from the 70s and they hung onto those things well into the 90s.
Well, you know the thing about Tupperware, right?
It never goes bad.
It used to be nigh indestructible.
Right, at that time.
Like
if you can find
Tupperware from like early 80s and back, that stuff will like live through the apocalypse, and it's treasured.
Weren't there like TV commercials back in the day where they tried to show you like, oh, you can drive a car over it and it won't smash?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And then they realized that's a really bad business model, so they started making them crappier.
Yeah, forced obsolescence.
And they're still pretty good. I have a Tupperware bowl that I've partially melted, and it still works just fine. It just looks a little goofy.
Right.
Hey, Tupperware, send us some Tupperware.
Yeah,
this show is brought to you by Tupperware.
This is a pro-Tupperware podcast, and I will stamp my name on that.
Yeah, also, if anyone give me some of those old light green Pyrex bowls.
Yeah, those are nice.
Oh, yeah, those are good.
I could use some of those. Like an old stand mixer as well.
You know, I am not above reusing Chinese food containers as lunch totes, you know, so I ain't got nothing wrong with old Tupperware.
All right, I know what I'm getting you next Christmas.
Bring it on, bud.
Chinese food?
Bring it on, bud.
Tupperware. I have Chinese food in spades.
Bring it on, bud. I love it.
Yeah.
So okay. This has been our digital Tupperware party.
Yes. Hell yeah. Thanks. Now that you've broken the seal, you cannot return them. Oh, boy. So, yeah, one of the main locations in this story is Flick's Tavern, as we mentioned. And I don't know why, but I thought it was extremely heartwarming when Ralph brought his son to the bar and Flick showed the kid how to become a bartender.
That was cute.
I don't know why that stuck out to me as like an extremely adorable bit, but I really loved it.
I think it's one of those things where it's like, it's almost pulling an 8-bit Christmas where it's like, you can't get away with this anymore, but it's cute. Fine. But
it's also one of those things that the kid obviously loves it because kids love goofing around doing with gadgets. And
kids love doing adult stuff, essentially.
And I think it's more to the point, the kid was using like the hose soda, which has like the 9 different buttons to dispense different like mixers and shit. And it's just, that's just fun. It has all these fucking buttons and they do shit.
Yeah, like I'm 36 years old. I still want to use one of those things someday.
I know what I'm getting you for Christmas.
Bring it on, bud. Oh, boy. Oh. So, Flick and Schwartz, huh?
They're here.
I loved seeing Schwartz again.
It's very good.
Yes, Schwartz was all around like, oh, this is that same little asshole.
That's very good.
he's a real piece of work, this kid. I mean, he's a 40-some-year-old man, but I'm still going to call him this kid because look at him.
Yeah, he has a fucking, like, pompadour just about. Like, he has, like, the most, like, he looks like he's watched Grease too much.
Yeah.
He's a Grease cosplayer.
He looks like an adult Schwartz. They nailed it, really.
They really did.
I mean, it's the same actor, right?
It is. It's both the same actors. And then Scott Schwartz is Flick, right?
Yes. Rob is Schwartz and Scott Schwartz is Flick.
That's a little confusing, but whatever. Scott Schwartz, who we last saw on A Wrestling Christmas Miracle.
Oh, right.
Is back in his element as Flick.
And he does fine.
That means he's in the Triple Threat Club, right?
Yeah, because he was in the original Christmas story.
Right.
No, same franchise. He's still in Double Trouble Town.
I forgot about the franchise.
All right. Well,
yeah, because if we let this and the original count for two, we'd be updating a lot of spreadsheets. And
that's true.
The only spreadsheets I gotta update are ones related to the video games I play.
That's fair.
Got 100% that Vampire Survivors DLC.
Oh, I already did. Don't worry about that shit.
I would like to point out for the folks listening at home, Scott Schwartz's Wikipedia page does not list a Wrestling Christmas Miracle. I wonder why.
Why would it? It's a source of great shame for all involved, including us on this podcast. Go check it out. It's a good episode.
It's a fun show. It's a fun show, not so much a fun film, but that's not really on us.
Yeah. Overall, like the returning characters are all pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I did like seeing everyone we saw,
up to and including Scott Farkas.
Yeah, Zach Ward did a really good job of being like a former asshole, I want to say.
Right, and yeah, up to. You know, the point in the film where he appears, it hadn't occurred to me yet. Like, I knew he was in the film, but I hadn't seen him yet. And I just kept thinking, what's going to happen? Where is he going to show up? Did not occur to me that he would be playing a police officer. But there he is. And he gets his little moment to tell Ralph that, you know, the day that you beat the shit out of me was the day that I turned my life around. And, in other times him saying that like he's one of the good guys now would be a fine thing, but they're like he's dressed out in, you know, his full police outfit and he's got this real shit eating grin on his face and you just know like he still maybe is a piece of shit, isn't he?
Well, it's just one of those disconnects between, and it's a problem because this movie is written this year, so one of the disconnects between what year it is and what year this movie is set in.
Right,
that's fair. That's fair. So maybe I should be giving Scott Farkas the benefit of the doubt here.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he's still a little shithard, I want to say, but like, I think probably him getting his ass kicked by a smaller kid probably taught him like, man, I got to rethink what I'm doing.
Yeah.
To a little bit of an extent to make him be less of an asshole, because he also did talk about, it was just one line, but it's also one of those lines that like speaks volumes because he talked about having a shitty dad himself.
Right, right. And when the whole movie is about, you know, trying to live up to, you know, the example that your father has set out for you, that's important. That's you know what, I'll give you that one. I'll take back everything I just said.
Yeah, more to the point, it's about like the shadow your dad cast on you when you're a dude, I think.
Yeah, and that's totally fair. And plus, at the end of the day, like, is he really going to be a piece of shit to Ralph, you know, at, like, midnight on Christmas Eve? No. No, he's not. Any reasonable human being would do the same thing. What else is going on in this film? Like, there's so many little vignettes and little scenes, and it's very episodic, but, like,
there's another overarching plot, and that is that Ralph needs to write his father's eulogy.
Yes.
Yes.
And he's putting it off, and so as a result, he writes this whole sort of memoir, which eventually gets him in the paper when his wife takes basically, like, the procrastination work that he was doing, where he's putting down all these memories of his dad, which is sort of supposed to be, like, the first Christmas story, you know.
He's
the Red Ryder BB gun, the bunny suit, because he's writing it up in the attic, and we're treated to like a little memberberry montage,
mm-hmm.
where he finds the bunny costume,
he finds the shade for the leg lamp, and
he finds the shade for the leg lamp, he finds the Red Ryder BB gun, and he's reminiscing about all these things. Can I say, for the most part, they showed a lot of restraint. A lot more than, let me put it this way, they showed a lot more restraint than I thought they would,
mm-hmm.
yeah. in pulling like these, you know, these nuggets out, you know, the highly marketable sort of things that everybody remembers, the leg lamp, the bunny suit. you know, yeah, at the outset, like, I was expecting the worst for this movie. I was like, oh, they're gonna dig up the leg lamp or like something like that, or you know, yeah, it's just gonna be like awful.
Like,
they didn't do that to their credit.
I would have loved it if at one point one of the kids comes down and is like, hey, look what I found in the attic, and is wearing the bunny suit, and that's all that it shows up. That would have been a good one.
Like, if the daughter had done that, that would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, the parts that, like, kind of, like, made me be like, ugh, the most were just anytime, like, it played, like, clips of the first movie, because it's just like, yes, guys, I remember the first movie. I remember, you don't got to play the sound bites for me. And just also just I'm not going to pretend I'm not the nitpickiest person around. One thing I will nitpick about was when they were showing pictures on the wall at the beginning, the picture of Ralphie Scott Schwartz and Flick is just like, or is it Scott Schwartz or is that the actor?
Just Schwartz and Flick.
Ralph Schwartz and Flick.
Yeah. The picture of them is just, it is just a black and white, like still from the
still
movie of them
from
just
the movie.
Standing on the, yeah, walking home from school or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is not a picture someone would have taken of them. I understand if you can't I understand that you don't have a picture of them, but like, please don't just put scenes of them, of the movie as pictures. It just looks weird.
Yeah.
Well, and two,
Santa's Workshop a little bit when they're playing those voice clips. I thought it would have been great if he opens up the box with the bunny. If they're going to play the clip, have Ralph shut down the lid and just stop the clip immediately. It's like, this looks like a deranged. He just closes it.
Yeah, play it up as a gag. Don't just, you know, do it for the sake of doing it.
Don't do it as a member, Barry.
Right.
But that's what they did.
But also,
but still,
the photograph thing, I get the sense that this was a very cheap production. And not in the sense
I was like, yeah, they filmed it in like Eastern Europe, like Hungary or Bulgaria.
They filmed it in Bulgaria. And the first inkling of that is when the credits start to roll and you see all of these Slavic names start to roll by.
That's wild.
You realize, like, oh, wait a minute, something's going on here.
It's like a tax credit thing, right? It couldn't possibly be cheaper to, well, I guess just cost of living and whatnot. But
I fully 1,000,000% believe this was like a tax write-off for Warner Brothers or something.
Okay.
It had to be. Because like as much of an obvious like slam dunk it would be for them to just put this out around the holidays and get people to watch. I mean, there's no incentive to really put a whole lot of money behind it because, you know, it's a Christmas story and Peter Billingsley's no Tom Cruise. You know? He doesn't command millions of dollars. And the fact that Peter Billingsley also like wrote and produced this kind of tells you that this may have been a little bit of a passion project and Warner Brothers really didn't want to throw any money behind it at all.
Yeah, so, right. Who else? Nick Schenck is the other guy who wrote it, which is behind Gran Torino and Narcos.
Right.
Is what IMDb is telling me.
Yeah. And Clay Cadis, the co-writer and director, he directed the Christmas Chronicles, and he was a big like animator for Disney for a long time.
Oh, the Angry Birds movie. Oh,
yeah,
the Angry Birds movie. Sometimes racism is correct.
The Angry Birds movie from the writer from John Vitti, the writer of the King of the Hill episode where Hank Hill gets raped by a dolphin. Always remember.
Oh,
that.
Oh no,
sounds about right.
Speaking of Peter Billingsley, can I just say, he still got it as far as the Ralphie emotes go. Like,
yes.
The wide-eyed stare into the camera.
Yes.
Still on point.
I did love the little shitty, like, breaking the fourth wall grin after chuckling
at the camera.
After he hung up on Randy, after being a shit to Randy, yes.
I will say, though, I am not a fan of adult Ralphie doing the same little hee-hee-hee that kid Ralphie did. It just don't sound right to me.
I do love... It's extremely good when it comes after him being a asshole to his brother, though.
Oh, yeah, that one's fine.
Because I don't have any brothers, but I do think that if you have a brother, there are times where you both can very easily suddenly regress into being, like, 10 years old.
Oh, I mean, even with a sister, I do it.
Oh, I can tell you it is a daily grind for me, sir.
But man, like, he's still got like the wide-eyed deer in the headlight stare. Like, mm-hmm. he can still do it as an adult. It's very yeah. good when they're haggling for the tree and he's like, "No, woman, what are you doing? I'm about to judo flip this whole deal." He's like, it's like, I'm just looking at Ralphie when he's young again. It's amazing. It's very good.
And then, so the geez, I don't know where to go with this from here.
There are a bunch of vignettes. Some of them are better than others.
There are scenes that rhyme with the original that don't necessarily directly like repeat it. Like when the radiator on the car goes out.
And
Ralph decides that, you know, now's a good time to have a snowball fight with his kids because they have to wait for the radiator to cool down. And he just slams his daughter in the face with a snowball and she almost loses an eye. It's like, oh, it's kind of like, you know, Ralphie shooting his eye out, but it's not quite. It's not the same thing. It's fairly similar though. Like, the same shit keeps happening to this family.
I will say, the dream sequences are not good, but the one good gag in the one dream sequence where he imagines he's being arrested, like he's going to jail, is that his son. Is wearing eye makeup and has a British accent.
Yes, that was fantastic.
Yes,
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yes, I absolutely loved older Mark. That was an amazing. Was that Billy Brayshaw is the actor there.
It's very good.
Oh boy. So, I mean, what we're saying here is, like, this is a genuine surprise to us, because I think we were all dreading the hell out of this movie.
I thought it was going to be so bad.
But
I thought it was going to be, like, just as bad as 8-Bit Christmas, if not. Because, I mean, Ralphie 2, which that's what I call Christmas Story 2, was just a slog. I remember watching it with you before the show even started.
That's right, so we did. Bad.
Yeah, I want to kind of say that the theme of this movie's plot is honestly is kind of, how do you live up to your predecessor?
That's in a way.
That's true, yeah. And the only thing you can do is just the best that you can. And if you create your own good memories along the way, then that's all that you can hope for.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea of just like catching stuff on TV and being like, oh, that's on, well, is pretty much past us.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't think this is going to become anybody's favorite in that way.
Right.
But at the same time, if you're looking for something to put on for Christmas, like, this is not your worst choice you can make, definitely, by a damn sight.
It's, yeah.
No, I mean, of this year's crop of Christmas movies, this is better than most. And we haven't really talked about many of this year's Christmas movies, but I'll go ahead and say the Will Ferrell, Ryan Reynolds musical Spirited, which is on Apple Plus, is okay, but it's like a 2.5-hour Broadway musical, and it wears out its welcome extremely quickly.
That's just, it's also just another Christmas Carol, right?
Yeah, it's literally just a Christmas Carol. And it coasts on how well you can stand Will Ferrell and or Ryan Reynolds for 2.5 hours.
Or musicals
for that matter. A couple of the songs are pretty good, I'm not gonna lie, but
okay.
This has such like refreshingly modest aspirations that I'm kind of into it, and I'm
just like the original in a way, if you think about it.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, because the Christmas Story was never setting out to like take over the world one screening at a time. It was just like a little vignette of like the Midwest in the you know 1930s or 40s. I forget when that was supposed to take place.
So did you guys ever go over this in the episode about the original? When did Christmas Story really actually like catch fire?
I think we mentioned it. I think it was sometime in the either late 80s or early 90s when TBS or TNT started doing their marathons, and they kind of just did it as a goof because they didn't have anything else to program.
Right.
And then it was like it was kind of popular, so they did it again, and then they did it again, and then eventually it just became this institution that they couldn't stop because too many people were watching it.
Right.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, A Christmas Story is still a movie that's fun to watch, you know?
And it's so episodic that you can jump in and jump out at any point and not really feel like you're missing anything. And when you play it like 24 hours back to back to back, you can jump in the middle of it and then catch it and then watch the beginning again. And you know, it's all kind of, it doesn't really, you don't need to sit and watch it in one 90-minute block to get the whole experience. You can kind of
If it was a worse movie, that also wouldn't have worked either, because you wouldn't have had people basically want to be like, oh, I'm going to catch part of that, you know, if it wasn't worth catching.
Like, right. Like I could honestly see them, you know, in a year or two's time, them sort of slipping this into the 24-hour rotation just to see what happens.
Hmm.
And it may not take off, but I feel like it wouldn't be unwelcome. It might be gimmicky and kind of dumb, but people would watch.
Because, I mean, you mentioned the elf pajama pants, because I mean that's the thing with all three of those movies too, is all three of those movies are extremely like put a quote on some merchandise-able, basically.
Extremely branded, yes.
Toyetic.
How toyetic can you get? Yeah, like with Christmas Vacation, the thing that I've seen this year that I have never seen before is like merchandise that has Chevy Chase's face on it and it says Merry Clarkmas on it.
That's strange, but like even like several years ago at this point, I've seen like, you know, shirts that has say like, you know, just like have a picture of like Clark Griswold and have like quotes from the movie on it, stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, the idea of like that the merchandise is not from the movie but just about the movie, that's just weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want a t-shirt of with a picture of Clark Griswold and on the bottom it just says bend over and I'll show you.
I want Hallelujah, Holy Shit, Where's the Tylenol?
It should say Hallelujah on the front and then on the back, Holy Shit, Where's the Tylenol? Or just the whole rant on the back. Who cares? Who cares?
Yeah.
I want to say I've seen like bespoke like his and hers t-shirts and hers says, you know, why is the carpet all wet, Todd? And his says, I don't know, Margo.
I would almost be tempted to buy that.
That seems like the kind of thing that like a Disney couple would do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was
that's
thinking
a Disney couple thing.
Immediately of that you saw this in Disney World around Christmas time.
Maybe I did.
I don't know why I was thinking about it. Like literally yesterday, I was thinking about the original Vacation, like the going to Wally World one.
Mm-hmm.
And very specifically the scene with the cop where he's like, do you know what the penalty is for animal cruelty in the state? No, I don't, officer. Well, neither do I, but I bet it's pretty stiff. I don't know why I was thinking about that, but that was in my mind the other day, and I just had to share that because I don't know.
We did an OST party episode on that Vacation movie back in the summer, and the thing that I came away from that was that I think I had never seen the original like R-rated cut of Vacation before, and it genuinely shocked me. Because so much is cut out from the TV version that, like, I don't know. I think it was like watching a brand new film, and like the weird jokes where like they're in St. Louis and Clark asks the guy for directions and the guy just yells "fuck yo mama."
Yeah, that's one of the alternate take movies, because in the TV version he's just like, who do I look like, Christopher Columbo?
Yeah, yeah.
Because European Vacation is the same way. Like, I only really remember it for like the nudity. They definitely filmed alternate takes without nudity though. Like in the scene where they're in like the theater in France, and there's a bunch of like a topless women doing like aerobics is apparently the act. There's mm-hmm. There's a TV version where they're all wearing all still wearing shirts and stuff.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, so they did film a couple of alternate scenes and stuff like that, which I do kind of wish more movies did that. I forget what horror movie it is. There's one of those, like, whatever the Living Dead movies, like a C or D tier zombie movie where there's a character in the in like the theater version, who wears a jacket that says "fuck you" on the back of it. And they refilmed all of his scenes for the TV version, and his jacket says TV version on the back of it in those.
It says TV version.
Yes.
I want to say that's awesome. That's got to be Return of the Living Dead. That sounds like a Return of the Living Dead thing to do.
I want a jacket that says TV version written on the back in tape. Oh my goodness.
It also reminds me of like the how Shaun of the Dead, I think Hot Fuzz too, like they have... They've like re-recorded the dialogue for a lot of those so they could show them on airplanes and stuff, and like all the F-bombs were replaced with the word funk.
Yes, I like that.
Which is also very good. We're getting a far afield of A Christmas Story Christmas tonight, so do we have anything else that we'd like to say about it before we move forward?
I have one other little minor gripe.
Okay.
And that I feel that Ralph's wife was maybe written a little too, like her dialogue is like a little too like 2010, 2020. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It's a bit anachronistic, I feel like. Like that's just her mannerisms and like her sense of humor is more contemporary, which isn't necessarily like a problem, but it did stick out a little bit.
Yeah, I don't remember if any of the books go as far as to give Ralph like an adult family, so I can't really comment on any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it does kind of, because also some of the things the kids say, Mark and Julie, do feel a little that's what a 2010 2020 kid would say, not what a 1973 kid would act like or look like.
Right
yeah. But in my mind,
minor complaints.
Yeah, in my mind, that just kind of says to me that like those characters aren't really the important part of the movie. They didn't put too much thought into that.
Yeah, right. I mean, it feels like the kind of level of like, I have a cat who's mad at me because she's walking on my desk and I don't want her to do that.
Uh-oh.
Lucy, go. it's kind of the same level of like complaining about like Hungry Hungry Hippos wasn't released yet in 73, which is like,
oh, was it?
Yeah, not. Sure, but also, oh well.
Yeah,
that's true.
What are you gonna do?
Because I think the important part is that like Ralphie and like Schwartz and Flick do feel like genuine like 70s assholes in this movie.
Right,
they do. Yeah, they really feel like two guys who have just kind of hung around each other for the last 30, 40 years. They're like an old married couple.
Yeah. So, yeah, I...
Oh, I will say the barfly bits with the phone are very good.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, when the wives are calling on the phone, and he's like, is John here? And the guy's like, no, I'm not here. That's good stuff.
Yeah, and a relic of a long past age, but still.
I was really hoping for like a Simpsons style prank phone call at some point.
Yeah, have Mark and Julie call the bar,
or just have Grover Dill be the kind of dickhead who just calls into Flick's bar and makes crank phone calls. I don't know. Oh boy, so I guess where do we want to leave this film? Do we want to talk about the ending? Do we want to just kind of leave that for anybody who wants to go watch it themselves? I'm okay either way.
We already kind of touched on it,
right?
I mean, there's a happy ending, as most Christmas movies have.
Actually, I'll put it this way: I actually really thought that this movie did. Right by Darren McGavin. I was kind of worried how they were going to play. I mean, because he passed away a long time ago, but how they were going to treat that. And largely, you know, his photographs on the wall, and everyone kind of acknowledges that he's not around anymore. And that's fine. I think I just missed Darren McGavin. But for the most part, it was very respectful. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and I think it did better of having this be the premise of the movie, that the dad passed away, rather than just be like, here's something to fuck with you, you know, 90 minutes into a 95-minute movie.
Yeah, like a right. to blindside you, like some other films that we've talked about before have done.
Yeah.
Are we talking about 8-Bit Christmas?
Yeah.
Getting flashbacks.
Yeah.
Really don't like it.
It didn't pull the wool, like, it didn't pull the wool over our eyes or pull the rug out from under us, however you want to put that. Like, it just, it pretty much, like, it, mean, you knew where it was going and it went there and it was okay. Everything
yeah,
was
I mean,
fine.
It's kind of like I said about 8-Bit Christmas when we watched it, too. I said, you know, if the movie had, like, laid out the premise to begin with that, like, oh, this is the first Christmas without Dad, it would have been better because
yes.
you would know the stakes going in. That's not the kind of fucking thing you can surprise people with.
No, mm-hmm. that is it's too big of an ask for a movie like that. And it's just there to sort of tug at the heartstrings in a way that's like not really earned at all. And this movie did it right and kind of earned it the right way. And I appreciated it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's I think everything we have to say about Christmas Story Christmas. So let's jump over to the crankometer where we can rate this and finally put 2022 to rest. The crankometer is our patented XY axis for rating Christmas movies. The X axis is how Christmassy a film is, and the Y axis is how good a film is. So, gentle friends, on this Christmas edition of Christmas Creeps, how Christmassy is A Christmas Story Christmas?
It's pretty Christmassy.
Yeah.
Pretty dang Christmassy. Could have been Christmassier.
Yes, it could have been Christmassier, indeed. I think the fact that our main character is an adult and not a child, like, even though it's the same cast of characters, it's the same town, the framing, I think, makes it a little less Christmassy. Because you lose a lot of that childlike wonder of, like, hoping for a gift.
Yeah, right? I mean,
is it going to happen? And, like, though, just you know, the Christmas story just nails, like, a youthful sort of wonder of Christmas that we don't get here. Which is fine, because it's not what this movie is setting out to do.
I mean, it's, yeah, it's kind of one of those things where it's, like, Christmas is really about... living up to your kids' expectations when you have kids. I think that one of the characters actually said that in the movie, right? Like, didn't Ralph say that? That, like, once you have kids, Christmas is about them, basically?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I feel that. And that's Christmassy in its own way. But it's not...
Yeah.
It's not as fun in a way? I don't know.
Well...
I'd give it, like, a... sorry.
No, all I was going to say was, like, this compared to the original, this one does not strike me as a film that's for children. And right. Not to say that the original was either, but this one feels to me like they really were focusing on, like, nostalgia for the original, and kids just don't have that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still want to say, I think they really kind of, I don't know if I want to say threaded the needle, but they did a pretty good job of, like, yeah, this still kind of, like, feels kind of in the ballpark of what you're wanting for a movie that's making you remember A Christmas Story fondly, basically.
Right.
Because, you know, in retrospect, when you think about it, it's like, what the hell did the leg lamp have to do with Christmas? What the hell did the, you know, the Little Orphan Annie have to do with Christmas? Like, so much stuff in The Christmas Story didn't have anything to do with Christmas either. So, yeah,
that's what made it good.
Yeah. So having all these, like, weird, just, like, small town, I want to say, like, side stories and distractions was pretty... I still liked them. Like, the idea that they've turned, like, an old abandoned, like, army test site into a sledding ramp.
Oh my god, yes.
they've taken, like, a rocket launching platform, and now they're just sledding off of it.
Let's launch over it. Oh, and they again, like, they nearly kill one of Ralph's children and Schwartz for that matter, but you know, it was the 70s and I wasn't there, but we just did that kind of thing back then.
Yeah,
they just did that kind of thing back
yeah,
then
yeah
Yeah, it's like, Ralph's like, oh yeah, you know, Mark broke his arm, and Sandy's reaction is just kind of like, oh.
Oh, poor kids. So I'm gonna jump in and say this is at least a 3, possibly a 4.
I'm comfortable with a 3.
Yeah, I want to say 3. Like, overall, like, the big Christmas scene didn't quite feel like it had the same pop that the original movies did.
Right.
Right.
I'm not, like, it's one of those things where it's also, it's just like, you are kind of comparing it to as like, I don't know if I want to say, I don't know how much I mean these words when I say them, but I don't know a better way to phrase it. It's, you're comparing it kind of as close to perfection as you're going to get. So it's going to be hard to equal it and impossible to surpass it, I think.
It's, I think a good film analogy would be, how on earth do you make a sequel to 2001? I don't know, but 2010 sure did try. I mean, it's fine in its own right, but I mean, look at what you're comparing it to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That may be a comparison for just me. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of movies that we've all seen where it's like, that was an okay movie. If it didn't have the like original one that it's trying to stack up against, I would appreciate it a lot more.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, how many of those have we seen, like, on this show alone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Several, many. So, yeah, I think a 3 is fine. I'm okay with that. And now the y-axis, where we decide, you know, whether we liked this movie or not. I think we were all pleasantly surprised by this.
Yeah. Yes.
To the extent that you can enjoy, you know, sort of a nostalgia bait kind of sequel that was clearly made to just get clicks on HBO Max. Yeah, it's pretty good. It didn't light the world on fire. It didn't set my imagination adrift, but, you know, I had a good time with it, and I would maybe watch it again next year. So, again, yeah.
If the simple metric of, like, do I regret having clicked play on HBO Max? No, not really.
Yeah.
No.
Those modest ambitions were met, and I appreciate that.
My expectations were so low going into this, though.
Weren't they?
Like, oh, I was just ready for the worst. I was ready to hate this movie so much, and I didn't. And that's a feat in itself.
Aside from the fact that, like, you can see the ending coming basically from the very start of the film, I didn't mind it, you know?
I mean, Ralphie was going to get published one way or another. That's how Christmas movies work that aren't total head trips, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not even, like, that doesn't even register for me as a weak point.
Well, it wasn't even so much that Ralph gets published. It was more, oh, this is the story of how Ralph eventually writes a Christmas story.
Okay, yeah.
You know, like, okay.
Fair
enough. As soon as you introduce the fact that Ralph is a writer and he has to write his dad's eulogy, I'm going, okay, I know exactly where this is going. And it went there, but it didn't do it in a way that was like, it shoved my face in it. So
right.
I'm okay with
that. I just have a complete nothing point. I would have been in love with this movie if Ralph was writing, like, JFK assassination like spy thriller novels rather than sci-fi.
Oh, man.
Oh, dear.
Mainly just because I'm thinking about, like, the unpublished novel, and it makes me think about Gone Home, I guess, probably. I think that's where I'm drawing the comparison.
Yeah, because his unpublished novel is, like, this gigantic, it's basically Dune, is what he tried to write, I think, but that's a joke that doesn't really work for me. Because you're right, it's too random and wacky.
Yeah, he's written like a 2,000-page sci-fi novel that's just so bulky that there's not even a good place to, like, cut it into parts, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a little, it is what it is.
I did enjoy the I guess sort of the dream sequence where he's imagining what the perfect Christmas with his family is, and he, like, they're sitting around the fireplace, and he's reading from this gigantic, cartoonishly huge tome where he's apparently reading the book to his kids.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Score, please help me. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. I need a score.
What did we give the original one?
Let me look that up really fast.
Is it a nat 5?
I'm assuming it was a 5-5, but I could be wrong. This was a 6-4.
6-4. If the quality was a 4.
I want to say that like a 3-2 would be pretty good for this.
So effectively, this was half of what the original film was. This film is half the bad that A Christmas Story was.
Which is about what you're going to hope for after this many years after a sequel.
That's true.
It's. I was fully prepared to vote this thing a negative before I... If you know what we should really start doing?
What's up?
We should really start writing down our expectations of the Crankometer before we start the movie.
Oh, I like this game.
Maybe that can be an addition to the new season.
Next year? Like, what? So then...
It's like a what I expected and what I got
right.
sort of situation.
So then at the end of the year, we can see kind of where we assumed all the films were going to be and then where they actually wound up going.
Right.
That's not a bad idea. I'm into that.
All right.
We'll think about that for January.
I might start adding it to my notes, at least.
All right.
If I remember.
So is it
probably won't.
Is a 3-2 where we're going to land on this?
That's what I'm saying.
I think that's fair.
I think that's fair as well.
I think having a 2 as the quality quotient is an accomplishment in itself.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Hats off to you. A Christmas Story Christmas.
Yes, thank you so much, Christmas Story Christmas, for not
just sucking.
For just not
doing
sucking.
What we thought you would do.
For zigging where we thought you might zag. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it feels like at least some of the people involved with this wanted this to exist for its own sake, rather than just like, you know, like here's a profit vector we haven't completely run dry yet, basically.
Right. And
exactly.
I think Peter Billingsley being involved in that certainly helps, because I think he's smart enough to know that, like, this movie alone is kind of his lifeblood. And if he messes this up, you know, that could be a problem for him.
And there might even be some personal business in it with him then about, like, the how do you live up to the original type thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, like, he's how old and he's still the kid from The Christmas Story?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Getting a little heavy here.
See, I did not expect to have to weigh in like this on A Christmas Story Christmas, and I'm genuinely surprised. It's a Christmas miracle. Oh, boy. Well, that's going to do it for A Christmas Story Christmas. So we've landed on the Crankometer with it as a positive 3, positive 2. So do with that information what you will. Anyone who's out there listening. Booker, excuse
book 'em, Booker.
So finally, friends, this being our Christmas episode, we're going to indulge a little bit. We're going to run a little bit long. Going to jump straight in here and see if we've got any questions from the Peanut Gallery tonight. We've got one from our pal. I have never said his name out loud before until just now, and when I say it, you'll know why. Our pal Goob Sausage on our Discord channel asks, if you had to choose a Christmas movie for Turner to broadcast on cable for 24 hours besides A Christmas Story, what would it be?
I feel like I should have given this more thought before this moment. You two go ahead first.
I mean, I feel like this is a two-part question for me, because the one answer is if I was running Turner Broadcasting, or
right,
if I'm just myself and I get to program what I want, you know?
I mean, the answer if you're running Turner Broadcasting is probably going to be something along the lines of Elf, right?
Probably like the Grinch, or honestly, it,
you put on the most popular thing that gets you the most money, the most eyeballs on ads, and that's right. That's that.
But that's also the boring answer. So the more fun answer, the more entertaining answer, I'm gonna say, run the Silent Night, Deadly Night saga 24 hours a day. What are you even doing?
I love it.
TCM After Dark, Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, 24 hours. Here we go. Oh boy. I just got in the mail the other day from Vestron Video. They just put out a collection of Silent Night, Deadly Nights 3, 4, and 5 on Blu-ray.
For who other than you? Did you like personally order this get made?
I don't know. I've seen a lot of people on my Twitter posting pictures of it saying, "Hey guys, look what I have." Like, they're the only person in the world that has it. So I know I'm not alone.
That's because the only people left on Twitter are like the most psychotic of the psychopaths.
I know, it's fucking great. That's a lie. Twitter's a hellish nightmare right now. I'm sorry. But I'm very much looking forward to dipping into Silent Nights 4 and 5. I will not subject you two to those unless you ask me to.
Yeah, well, they're probably going to keep making Christmas horror movies, so we're probably not going to reach the bottom of the barrel anytime soon.
Oh, my dude, there are like 4 that just came out this month alone.
That's ridiculous.
Not the least of which is Violent Night, which I feel like people have expected us to weigh in on, and honestly, none of us have seen it yet.
Is that the David Harbour one?
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about what I would air 24 hours a day. I mean, I know what my heart says, but I don't know if it's a good answer.
What does your heart tell you?
I mean, I would air Tokyo Godfathers 24 hours a day because it's the best goddamn Christmas movie that exists.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
And here's how you do it. You run the sub, then you run the dub. Then you run the sub, and then you run the dub. That's how you do it.
Or you do it the way TBS and TNT do it, and they stagger it like an hour back and forth, you know? So right. TBS does the sub at 8, TNT starts the dub at 9.
There you go.
I like that. I like that a lot.
I still need to watch it this year. Mm. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, man. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, and the Christmas movie that I'm really starting to hope takes off is Klaus.
Klaus is really good. I was thinking about that today.
We watched it the other night, and it still like hits me right in the feels. And it's just, God, why aren't more people watching this movie?
You know the world we live in.
Oh, I know. It's because everybody's not watching The Grinch instead. And they're both on Netflix, and why would I watch the thing that I've never heard of when I could just watch The Grinch again?
Right.
Jonathan. We have yet to hear from Jonathan Five regarding this question.
I mean, the simple answer is just swap out A Christmas Story with Christmas Vacation. It works the same. It's pretty episodic. You can kind of jump in where you want to. It has enough memorable scenes that you'll have one that you like want that, like, oh yeah, such and such is about to happen. I'm going to catch that. Speaking of which, I forgot to mention, I loved the publisher's bribe drawer.
It's a very good
game. Yeah, it's full of, like, there's a gold bar, like a couple of like expensive watches, some like tickets to some look like they're Super Bowl tickets, just stuff like that in there.
Cuban cigars. Yeah. To set up the gag, Ralph is trying to bribe this publisher with like chocolates. It's not even like the level of like Ferrero Rocher. It's like mall chocolate.
No, it's like it's department store chocolate.
Right, there you go.
So it's like medium pimpin' type levels, basically.
It's the scene from the original where he bribes Miss Shields with a basket of fruit.
And I
essentially.
I do love the little like back and forth there too. Like, is this a bribe? Like, I don't know, is it?
Do you want it to be? And then to echo another...
But the best part is when he puts it in the drawer and then Ralphie just mugs at the camera, he's like, got him.
And then again, to echo the first film, you see, you know, he puts the chocolates in the drawer, and you see all the other crap that's been given to him as bribes over the years.
Yeah, because in the credits of this movie, it does have like the it's like poetry they rhyme pictures of like the two of like the scene from the original movie and the scene from this one echoing it.
Right. Yeah. And that's a clever enough little nod to the original that I don't mind it, and I kind of wish the film did more things like that.
Because so many of the scenes aren't even ones you'd think about. Like, the scene of Ralph answering the phone is, like, set up the same way as the scene of his mom answering the phone, stuff like that. Like, it's at the same angle.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Reminds me of the episode of Nirvana, the band, the show that we did the podcast on, where they're referencing all of the random little things about Home Alone that you never think about, but as soon as you see them, you know them immediately.
Exactly. Oh, God. What a good episode. Did you ever watch the rest of that series, Joe?
I watched the first, I think most of the first season. I hadn't gotten around to the second yet.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, is there anything else that we need to talk about before we go tonight?
You need to join our Discord. Because Twitter is dying.
You absolutely need to join our Discord. The link is in our show notes. We can't put the link on Twitter because technically we're not allowed to anymore, even though we never did in the first place. Because the last time we did, something bad happened, so we're never going to do that again. But if you want to join our Discord, go to check out our show notes. The link is there. We would love to have you. Us and our little enclave of friends and weirdos, you know, we post memes and talk about video games and whatever we're watching on TV right now, all kinds of fun stuff.
There's a lot of shit posting about whatever the most recent thing to happen on the internet is. If you're into that, get in here.
And there's a whole channel for Brad's cooking. It's fantastic.
Oh, not just my cooking. I somebody should join me.
Oh, I mean, maybe in the new year I will.
Oh my god, I forgot until they, like, put them side by side, but there is a scene in the original movie of Ralph, like, mugging at the camera, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've forgotten all about that, damn. so Discord's fun. You can go in there and, like, post pictures, and you can type in /tenor and then put a thing in there, and it gives you a GIF of the thing you're looking for. Like, it's just cruise control for cool.
Yeah, it's all the cool kids are doing it. All the Christmas creeps are here as well, and we would love to have you. So join our Discord, and I really don't want to tell you where else to go because, you know, ChristmasCreeps.com tells you everything.
Yeah, I mean, we two of us have made Mastodons just in case Mastodon becomes a thing anybody uses. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I created a co-host, I created a Hive account. I don't know what else to do because I'm kind of just waiting for the ship to sink and to see where all the rats go.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of date when we're recording this, I think everyone's going to be looking forward to saying the words margin call a bunch tomorrow and seeing what happens.
Yeah. So, I mean, by the time you're hearing this, the world may be completely different. We don't know yet.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
Yeah.
5 days is a long time in the scope of the internet.
Yeah, you don't know who gets chopped apart with a saw by the certain families running certain countries. And, you know, and what they learned about the first time they did it was apparently it's okay if they do it because they didn't get in trouble for it, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
somebody who's not a human pile of garbage.
Grown men go to the World Cup and don't leave alive. Oh, Boise. Well, folks, that's been Christmas Creeps for 2022. I don't really know what else to say tonight because we've pretty much run through everything that we've had planned. Any predictions or shots that we want to call for 2023?
Oh, man.
So here's what I think. I think you should go to this website. I'm going to read the name out, okay?
Okay.
www.nfl.com.
Just check it out. Yeah, you could do that. What I was more thinking was that you could go to the site mogstation.com, mogstation.com. That's where you can sign up for a Final Fantasy 14 account.
There it is.
Just check it out.
Make an account, sign up for a couple months, let me know. I'll give you a refer friend code so I can get some more gold chocobo feathers and get the last refer friend exclusive mount I don't have yet.
Joe, you need to start tagging these podcasts somewhere in the show notes. Just put this podcast has gone X number of episodes without mentioning Final Fantasy 14, and it's always going to be zero.
It's always going to be zero. We just make a little sign that goes on like the banner for each episode.
Exactly.
Good lord.
I mean, if literally everybody I knew played it, I wouldn't have anybody to tell to play it anymore. I mean, there's your answer.
So you see, I'm doing you a service by not playing it.
If that's the way you want to view it.
Sure, bud. So I'll ask it once again. Do you guys want to call a shot for next year? Something you really want us to finally get to on this podcast?
Oh, dear. I'm just happy to be here.
Listen, if you make me pick all the episodes, we're going to have a bad time.
I want to have a bad time. I'm here for the punishment. Give me the chocolate.
All right. Well, I mean, coming in January, Killer Raccoons 2, Dark Christmas in the Dark.
Yes. Yes. Want more bad movies. I want the bad movies.
So what,
give me the bad movies.
What season are we coming up on now? Like season 7? Season something like that?
Season 9.
I think it's about time that I can bring in Ted McGinley to replace me and just kind of spend more time playing Final Fantasy 14. Hey, if Netflix actually put out another movie about talking dogs farting on Christmas instead of doing some bullshit fucking TV show about, like, what if dogs were Harry Potter? What the fuck is going on?
What the hell are you talking about?
Because the Air Bud talking dog people, they're just doing fucking series now. And, like, any series is just basically just fucking Harry Potter now. It's just like, what if everybody was at a school for the stupid bullshit they do?
They're magic dogs?
Doesn't necessarily mean magic. The point is that they're at some stupid fucking school for something.
Are you specifically talking about the Addams Family show?
No, but fuck that thing too, actually.
Because you're just describing the Addams Family show now. Oh, my goodness. So, this train is pulling into the station, folks, and I don't know where else to go with this, so I do believe it is time for us to wrap up this podcast for the evening and get back to celebrating Christmas in our own way. Or, you know, not even Christmas, whatever holiday you celebrate, because, you know, we're inclusive here on this show. Whatever you want to do, however you want to celebrate, it's fine with us. We don't care.
Or don't celebrate. That's fine, too.
Yeah,
the only good story that ever took place at a school was bully because you could run over authority figures with a golf cart. The video game, I should say, not the movie. I've not seen the fucking movie, and I don't plan on it.
Are you talking about Big Bully with Rick Moranis?
No, there's actually a movie called Bully, I think. But I think it's like, I don't know, it's probably too serious for its own good.
I know there's a documentary about bullying called Bully.
Anyway, I'm talking about the Rockstar game Bully, where you play as a Holden Caulfield kid, except at the end of the game you can get a golf cart and you can just run over all the prefects with a golf cart, and it's satisfying.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to hear you talk about it for a minute.
Yeah.
Very good. So, gentle friends, thank you for joining us on this wonderful Christmas evening. Where we talked about A Christmas Story Christmas, a film that genuinely surprised us by how not terrible it was, and that, in fact, how kind of good it was, how much we kind of enjoyed it.
Good job.
Great job, team. Bradford, Jonathan Five, thank you so much for being my wingman on this ridiculous journey of ours. I couldn't do it without you.
And thank you, the listener, for being the other wing person on this journey. We know you have a lot of choice when it comes to entertainment, and we really appreciate you listening.
You are the wind beneath our wings.
Yes.
And if there's anything you want to send to us, if it's on Twitter, we may not be on Twitter in the new year, who knows. facebook.com/christmascreeps or the same Instagram at christmascreeps, or you can find anything else related to the show at christmascreeps.com. Go to those places, find us, go to our show notes, join our Discord. We would love to talk to you. Thank you so much for listening. This has been a delight.
It sure has. Good night, everybody. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Garbage day.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.
I just thinking about the line from Metalocalypse now. It's like, so you're going to be mad at me, but I forgot to hit record. But here's the good news. I'm sorry.